Welcome to Speak for Yourself. I'm Jason Whitlock. Kyle Hurd is off today. Coming up, we'll take a look back at Lamar Jackson's debut with the Ravens, and we'll have the latest on the Urban Meyer investigation at Ohio State. But let's begin today in the NFL, which kicked off the football season last night with the Hall of Fame game and an officiating display that left me sick to my stomach. The league debuted its new tackling rule, which prohibits leading with your head. Just a few short minutes into the game, the refs threw a flag for this hit along the sideline. I quickly got out of my seat and started hunting for my remote control. Before I could find it, one of my favorite football broadcasters said this.
You're in extreme danger playing the game of football, and so they basically have really committed themselves to making this a safer game. And I know people are going to say, you know, this isn't football anymore and it isn't what it used to be. And I think even Terrell Suggs would agree, good. That's what it should be, because if your son or daughter is going to play the game of football, you want it to be as safe as possible. And I think for the most part, the players have embraced the rule changes.
I was absolutely sickened. Later in the game, this hit across the middle was flagged. The NFL is intent on destroying itself. The league is so determined to win the hearts and minds of non-football fans, the game is turning off its base. Me, someone who loves football. I watch football for the intense competition, the controlled violence, and the toxic masculinity. I know the risk. I don't want to be preached to about the dangers of the game. When I watch boxing or mixed martial arts, no one lectures me that the combatants might wind up like Muhammad Ali, damaged by Parkinson's disease. People who hate football, men, and masculinity have done an awesome job of convincing the world that football leads to debilitating brain damage. They'd have you believe that 10 to 20% of all NFL players will leave the game brain damaged and a mental wreck. 82-year-old Jerry Kramer, a 2018 Hall of Fame inductee, played in the NFL when it was at its most brutal. Last night, he looked and sounded like the majority of old NFL players.
Mr. Baker, the chairman of the Hall of Fame, said, Jerry, what have you been doing lately? I said, Mr. Baker, I've been really busy. I've just been doing a lot of stuff. He said, you ain't seen nothing yet.
The overwhelming majority of my friends are former college and pro football players. The way the media portrays the game, you think a good percentage of my friends would be broken down and or losing their minds. It's not true. The media are doing everything possible to convince non-football fans that the game is evil and a scourge on society. The leaders of football now believe it's their job to win the support of moms across America. Conventional wisdom says that if we don't win the hearts and minds of mom, the game is going to die. Really? How do you think moms across America feel about strip clubs, porn, the oldest profession? Have those industries suffered? A man is going to do what a man is going to do as long as he's willing to be a man. Football doesn't need mom. Football needs the courage to quit apologizing for being football. It needs to quit chasing mom and the left-wing media types trying to scare mom. The game should chase its fans and its competitor. Everybody who plays in the modern NFL knows the risk and the rewards. Everybody playing the game believes the rewards outweigh the risk. Everyone who truly enjoys watching the game is perfectly fine with the players being highly compensated gladiators. Most of us would sign up for the job if we were good enough. The league better dump this new rule before it loses dad and all of us toxically masculine men. All right, joining me now are former NFL head coach Eric Mangini, former Pro Bowler T.J. Houshmandzadeh, longtime NFL player and scout Bucky Brooks. Guys, I think the NFL is making an enormous mistake. They're chasing the wrong audience. The casual football fan, they should ignore them and leave them alone. We don't need mom to love the game in order for the game to be successful.
Well, I have a couple different perspectives on this, because I've got the perspective as from a coaching standpoint where I miss a lot of the things that we used to be able to do. But from another standpoint, I've seen some of my former players who have had problems and have had serious problems, and I don't want that either. And then the second perspective is, as a dad, with now two sons who are playing football. And from that standpoint, I want it to be as safe as possible. Do I think that last night was representative of how this rule was going to be enforced during the season? No, I don't think so. I think they're going to go to extremes during the preseason, and they're going to try to get to a workable point during the season. But the goal of having a safer game, I think, is the right approach. Does it have to be to the point where we have extremes? No, I don't think we need to go that far.
I think it's very, very difficult to do what the NFL is trying to do. They're trying to legislate all the contact, all the physical play out of the game. At the end of the day, it's a gladiator sport. Everyone that walks between those lines understand how physical, how tough it is, the courage that you have to have. I think for defenders, I think it is challenging to kind of comply with some of these rules. Guys are moving, receivers flinch and duck and make moves, and no one is that precise when it comes to levying a hit. I just think that we need to make some sensible rules, but we can't legislate the hard hits and the contact. It is a physical sport. It's a collision sport.
First of all, the first penalty was not a penalty. It's impossible. How can you tackle somebody without lowering your head? Your head is going to lower every time you try to make a tackle. Your head has to go down.
When you lower your shoulder, your head goes with it.
It has to go down. The problem I have, I'm all for making the game safer. It's not about changing the rules that's going to make the game. It's the awareness that they've brought that's going to make the game safer. Guys are aware of it now. Like, coach high school football, guys, stop leading with your head. Stop banging heads for no reason. But when you're making a tackle, when you lower your shoulder, your head is going to drop. They're going to have to do something about this, because the game is, like, you literally be like, man, I'm not watching this. I'm turning the game. And so that's going to be you know how many coaches, he's a coach, he's old school. He's going to say everything right publicly, but let guys start missing that tackle. Man, you better get the guy down. I don't care what the rule says. I don't care how much you get fined. You better make the tackle, or you coming out the game. And making a tackle, you lower that shoulder, the head is coming with you.
To me, what blew me away last night, again, it's a television show. That's all this is. And it's a collision television show. And I love Chris Collinsworth. I consider him a friend. A lot of respect for him. But the way he started talking about the game early in the game, I was like, I'm not here for that. I don't want to think about, oh, my God, everybody's out here risking their lives, and I'm supposed to feel sorry for them. That's not the television experience I want as a football fan.
But the mom component, the kids participating in football component, that's real. That's happening. It's happening in Ohio, where I live, where less and less kids are participating. It's happening in the inner city. It's happening all over the place where they're – The level of kids that are getting involved because of the issues that have been brought up have declined pretty dramatically.
I don't have any doubt about that. And if the media decides to demonize something and create a hysteria around it, I'm not surprised that Americans follow that lead. But they're creating a hysteria. I'm just sorry, and people can call me the biggest idiot in the world. The game isn't as dangerous as the media is trying to lead everyone to believe. I just have too many friends that played football. I know too many old football players. The game is dangerous. I got a torn ACL from football. My knee will never be right. Everybody that plays for a long time has some sort of injury. But it was worth it. It was worth it.
It was worth it to me.
Oh, I mean, I was signed up to do it again. Like, that's what it is. I think there's nothing like the exhilaration of playing that sport. And I do believe there is a war on football in terms of creating a hysteria and making people nervous about putting their kids in the game. But good coaching, good techniques, good fundamentals, those things go a long way. It's going to be a contact sport forever and ever. But we can teach kids how to play the right way. I am worried that in trying to make the game so legal, so above board, that someone's going to get hurt because they pull up at the end of the day.
You're going to if you say tackle with your head up, you are going to get run through every single. You have no weight behind you. You have no strength behind you. You stay upright, you're going to get run through. You have to lower your head to stop the ball carrier from running you over. Or if you just sit there, he'll shake you and get right by you. There's going to be injuries. It's inevitable. It's going to happen.
If we keep going down this path, we're going to be looking at Pro Bowl-like football rather than football. And that's going to turn people off. That's my concern. Because if they start fining these defensive players or making it damn near impossible to play defense, their frustration level, and eventually they're going to figure out, it's like,
They don't even really want us playing football.
You know what the biggest problem is if they throw these flags in the playoffs, people are going to lose their mind. In the preseason, it's like, oh, it's a 15-yard penalty. Regular season game that really matters? You throw these flags in the playoffs, they're going to lose their mind.
Well, look, they're going to over-legislate it during the preseason. It's the way it always has been. Every new rule that comes into play, they throw a ton of flags, they get a bunch of tape on it, they try to figure out what the right point is. Are games going to be won and lost because of this rule? Absolutely. And throughout my career, I've been the beneficiary of some rule changes, like the Tuck rule. That's a rule I thought was a great situation for us in New England. And I've lost games because of rules. That rule where if a receiver was in the air and his feet would have come down, but he got pushed out, then it was a catch. I lost a game because of that one time. And these rules are going to affect wins and losses this season.
So, obviously, you are a very successful coach in the NFL. How would you, in the meeting room, coach and tell your defensive players, how would you handle this?
Look, with all these rule changes, it's a work in progress. And just as we have to see how it's being called, we have to see what's actually being penalized. And then you're constantly trying to adjust your tackling drills. You're constantly trying to adjust the way that you approach the ball carrier. It's new ground for everybody. There is no answer that every coach has at this point, but this is going to be part of the process that comes with the change.
Look, players are starting to act up because they're trying to make the game so soft the players don't want it. We got this kid Zendale wearing a hat, make football violent again. These hats are going to become pop. I want one of these hats. And again, I never played in the NFL. As a fan, I want to watch football. If it's going to turn into the Pro Bowl and tackling is illegal and hard hits are illegal, you're going to see some people, you know what, I'm good. Because what I saw last night, I've seen college football try to clean up the hits, and it wasn't like this mess that we saw last night from this officiating crew. I hope you're right, Eric. I don't know if I just have the faith that the NFL is going to walk this back to the right level.
Well, what's going to happen, too, is you've got a new league starting at the end of this year. You've got another new league possibly coming out, just like the UFC gained popularity because that's a certain type of fighting that people want to see. There could be another league that is much more in line with the way things used to be that comes up. And when the NFL will really respond is when it starts affecting things financially. So maybe this is a window for a competitor to give an alternative to the product that the NFL now offers.
When I started playing football, I didn't know the dangers. I didn't care. Now that I know the dangers, I still don't care. The risk, football has allowed me to support my family more than I've ever thought, way better than I grew up. And now that I know the risk, I would still do it again because it's afforded me a lifestyle that I would have never imagined. And so I know the risk. Players know the risk, and they'll take on that chance because it's, number one, it's very rewarding, but the competition and the excitement of playing with your teammates and me versus you, that's what we want.
Man, I think so many of the lessons that you learn from football, everyone talks about the violence of the game, being on a team, learning the lessons from your head coach, the competition, challenging yourself, being courageous. For me, football opened doors that I never thought would exist. Being able to go to college, being able to extend and play in the National Football League and do things that I never thought of. Football, to me, has been my only job. So for me, I'm forever indebted to the game. And yeah, I want to see it cleaned up, and yeah, I want everyone that plays to be healthy and safe and all of that. But at the same time, it's still the game that we fell in love with. I wanted to look close to that game.
But on the flip side, when I was first started coaching, guys would get concussions. You'd go and you'd give them a play. Hey, 34 cover 2, do you know what you're doing? If you told you, okay, you're good, go back in. Because we didn't know any better, okay? And there's a lot of guys that did get affected by it. We saw issues with dehydration where players unfortunately died because of poor dehydration. So I'm all for things that can keep the integrity of the game and make it as safe as possible with the complete understanding that you are playing football and there is an inherent risk of injury in that. So trying to find that fine line, it's not easy and it's going to take time, but I do think it's important to try to get to the best
place. If I were the NFL, and we'll end on this note, to me, the best thing you could do for player safety and still keep the game intact, expand your roster, have more players,
and require more players to actually take the field and play, lessen the burden on everybody in terms of number of snaps. That's the way to protect guys in terms of safety, more so than coming up with these silly rules that ruin the spirit of the game. All right, welcome back. Eric Mangini and Bucky Brooks are back. We're joined now by NFL Films analyst Greg Cosell. All right, let's move to last night's preseason opener, where rookie Ravens quarterback Lamar Jackson delivered a performance worthy of the Hall of Fame. I meant worthy of the Hall of Fame game. My bad. Jackson played the entire second half, completing four whole passes on 10 attempts for a whopping 33 yards. He did throw a touchdown, but also added a pick. Look, I said this yesterday. I've said it since he was drafted. I don't think he was a first-round pick. He's a project as a quarterback. And before we get into this discussion, I want to spray some Twitter off. I picked this up early today. It's Twitter off. Nobody can say any comments meant for Twitter, because the only damn reason this dude was a first-round pick is because of Twitter and social media. Anybody with an objective evaluation knew this guy's a third, fourth, or fifth-round pick and a project at quarterback, and that's what he looked like last night.
Well, I think most guys that play in their first preseason game, in the second, no. No, this is,
be honest.
This is lack of reality spray right here. Okay, real talk. So look, this is the guy's first game. It's the second half of the preseason game. And really what you're looking for from a quarterback is, how does he operate mechanically? Are there false starts? Does he fumble the snap? Does he just have...
The ball looked terrible coming out of his hand.
Well,
it looked terrible.
Do you remember Alex Smith's rookie year? Mm-hmm. Let me tell you Alex Smith's rookie year. He had 11 picks and one interception in 9 games. His completion percentage was his quarterback rating was 40%. Last year was 104. People get better. So before we rush the judgment,
I guess.
Yeah. Before we rush the judgment, why don't we give him a little bit more time?
I agree with that.
No, I agree with you. The guy that I saw play last night was the same guy that I saw at Louisville. Same guy that... Spectacular athlete, has a big arm, but the best game for him.
Hold it. Spectacular athlete.
Spectacular athlete.
No. There were other spectacular athletes out there. He didn't look as spectacular in the NFL as he does in college.
Yeah, but he ran pretty well. He had 25 yards. Like, he did okay. I think the big thing for Lamar Jackson is understanding Lamar Jackson doesn't throw the ball well outside the numbers. That is not his game. He struggled with that at Louisville. Whenever he had to push the ball outside the numbers to the boundary, lower completion percentage. When he put it inside the numbers, in breaking routes, that's what he does really well. What the Baltimore Ravens will continue to do over the course of the preseason, figure out what he does really well. And I would think that Marty Morenwig, Greg Roman, the rest of the offensive staff, if he has to play, they'll put together a game plan that accentuates the strengths of his game.
Well, what they'll do is what you see a lot of teams do now with quarterbacks like that, like Deshaun Watson. I think Deshaun's a better thrower than Lamar Jackson, but you put a quarterback in the gun, you get all those misdirection, deception, influence elements in your offense with all the backfield actions. You know, you've written a lot about this, and I know you believe this kind of thing, and it defines reads for quarterbacks. It theoretically makes it easier to make throws, see the throws, and you have a diverse run game. You get a lot of single high coverage.
So start from scratch.
No.
You compared him to Deshaun Watson. You know damn well he's not as good as Deshaun Watson.
He's not as good a thrower as Deshaun Watson.
He won't be as good of a quarterback.
Oh, wait a minute. When they played on the field together, Lamar Jackson was the better player on the field in that game down in Clemson. Lamar Jackson can make plays.
Bucks. I'm talking about the philosophy of offense. Bucky. Not a specific player.
Bucky, do you think if you had to draft today Deshaun Watson or Lamar Jackson, who you
Deshaun
thinking?
Watson. That's...
Well, I asked Bucky. He's trying to act like they're on the same planet.
No. I'm going to say Deshaun Watson is a more complete player. But when they play together, Lamar Jackson is not a slouch. Lamar Jackson will be a successful player in this league if they build this offense around him. Remember, in Houston, they did things we hadn't seen Bill O'Brien ever do with a quarterback. And they made it Deshaun Watson friendly. The same thing you have to do
exactly
with Lamar
right.
Jackson,
look,
Jared Goff, and all those other
Week
guys.
One to week two was a totally different offense. Tom Savage and then all of a sudden Deshaun Watson. That's what coaches do.
And it's an unfair question. You've got one body of work where a guy's proven against a guy who's not proven. Would you draft Tom Brady or Ryan Leaf? I don't know. At the time, people thought Ryan Leaf was a top talent. Now, they were wrong.
You guys all three know more football than I do.
But damn it, you're not convincing me right now, because when that ball comes out of Deshaun Watson's hand and the ball comes out of Lamar Jackson's hand, there's a huge difference. You can't tell me that there's not a huge difference.
You're talking about the loose ball? Peyton Manning doesn't throw a tight spar. There are plenty of guys that have been successful in this league that don't throw tight spars.
Eli Manning.
It has to be more than just that.
Did we get a full-strength can of Twitter?
We just compared
this guy to Peyton Manning. How did Peyton Manning get in this conversation?
You're talking about a loose ball.
Right.
A loose ball, a wobbler.
You're hearing what you want to hear.
I don't have a conviction that he's necessarily going to be what Baltimore hopes he is.
It's working now.
No, that's not where I come in on this. All I'm saying is we can't judge what he is based on what he did last night. It is such a
correct.
And you can't get excited about it, you can't get disappointed about it.
Oh, I can get disappointed.
It's another practice. it literally is another practice.
Welcome back. Eric Mangini, Bucky Brooks, and TJ Houshmandzadeh are back. Let's move to the latest Colin Kaepernick controversy. Video game company EA Sports, makers of the famed Madden football franchise, has apologized to Kaepernick for editing his name out of a song on the game's Madden 19 soundtrack. The company called it, quote, an unfortunate mistake. Kaepernick retweeted this tweet from Big Sean, who sang the lyric using Cap's name in the song, and said, much love, brother. Thank you for having my back. Madden did go on to say they'll make an update to the game, which will include Kaepernick's name. I can't believe when I saw this over Twitter and I saw people talking about it and I saw headlines, this is the biggest non-story I think I've ever seen. And I think that his name was edited out of last year's Madden game and it wasn't a big deal. He's not in the league. And so if Madden or whomever doesn't, like, the guy's not in the league. We took his name out of the song. He's not in the league. This is not a controversy. This is something that Twitter does to us and does to people. And, oh, my God, let's apologize to Kaepernick. His name's not in the song.
When I first heard about it,
Twitter off. Go ahead.
I thought what you thought is this must be a function of the fact that he's not with a team. I didn't realize that they've never done it to anybody else who was not with a team. And I think that's where people started to say, okay, this is obviously a different situation than just a function of he's not with the team.
A song? I just don't understand why are we going to edit him out of a song? Like, that doesn't make sense. I understand not being on the game, not being a creator player, but to edit his name out of a song is ridiculous. I just don't understand who at EA thought that was a good idea, that of all the things we're going to erase Colin Kaepernick's name out of a lyric that Big Sean had.
I'm going to tell you why. Because for the same reason Jordan allegedly said Republicans buy sneakers too. There are people that the national anthem is an emotional issue for them, and they buy Madden games, and they don't like Colin Kaepernick.
Okay.
And so EA's just trying to sell as many games as possible.
This isn't the topic. But he should be in the league, in my opinion. But this is what I don't like. You omitted him from the song? Why are you apologizing? You did it purposely. Just say, I didn't want his name in a song. It's my video game. I run EA Sports. I omitted him because that's what I wanted to do. I don't like when people do things purposely, which EA did, and then say,
two straight
years. I'm sorry. No, you're not sorry. You're sorry that people noticed it. And so now you're going to backtrack and say, oh, we'll put it back in. It's fine. This is your company. You can do what you want to do. Just like there's detractors that say, okay, we're not going to buy the game because his name is in it. There are people that will buy it that support him. This, again, is not the topic. He should have been given another chance to show whether he can or cannot play in the league. That's not the topic. But don't apologize. That's what I don't like.
Since you went there, I'm going to go all the way there. Let's say he was in the league and they gave him a proper rating on the game, which would be low. That would be a controversy as well. And then, oh, my God, Colin Kaepernick, the hero of America.
But everybody argues about their rating. Everybody.
I did that once before. Everybody argues about their rating.
When it comes to Kaepernick, it's racist. Oh, my God, his passing fit. It's not at an 82. I mean, that's got to be racism.
Look,
the guy can't throw straight?
Hold
How
on
about
a second.
That?
I was
I mean, he was good enough to lead a team. If you can lead a team to the Super Bowl, there's no way you should not be in the league. There's no way. And there's no way.
I was with him.
And how many years did he play?
He's still alive.
How many years
he's
did he play?
He's not in the league. You don't get to be in the league forever.
At his age. At his age.
You don't get to be in the league forever.
At his age.
Go ahead.
Look, in fairness, Colin, now, I was with him in San Francisco in the meetings. I watched him play. I watched him perform. There's a lot of players that aren't as good as Colin Kaepernick who are in the National Football League.
Oh, for sure.
Based on pure ability, Colin Kaepernick should be in the league. That there is no doubt about that.
Agree with you completely on that. But when you do something controversial and divisive that irritates your fan base, that X's out his talent, and that's why he's not in the league. And so that's just common sense. That's big. EA gets to be business people. NFL owners should get to be business people. Everybody should be allowed to conduct business. And if Colin Kaepernick wants to light himself on fire, he gets to do that. And people should quit feeling sorry for himself because he poured the gas all over himself. His girlfriend took the match and lit him on fire. It is what it is. Quit feeling, same way they shouldn't apologize, we should quit feeling sorry for him. He did what he wanted to do. He lit himself on fire.
I don't think he thought it would be this bad. I really don't.
He should have known.
Can't change it.
I tell you what, come at me with a gas can and a match, and it's going to be bad. I'm going to run away from it. He should have been smarter than that. The fire's hot. How many times have your parents got to tell you? Quit touching the stove. The fire's hot. To Ray Lewis, who did his famous squirrel dance to enter last night's Hall of Fame game. But that's not all that got everyone talking. Lewis is being criticized because he did an interview about his upcoming Hall of Fame induction right as Lamar Jackson was making his NFL debut. Haters on Twitter got upset because they felt Ray was upstaging Lamar. One of those haters, Pro Football Woke's Mike Florio, tweeted, "What a shock, Ray Lewis Bigfoots Lamar's debut." I can't stand Mike Florio. I love Ray Lewis. He's one of my favorite all-time players. What the hell did they expect? How is this Ray's fault? It's NBC's fault for interviewing him. Ray, it's Hall of Fame weekend. Ray, I'm sure, is on one and going to be on one the entire weekend. You put a microphone in his face, and he's going to explode. It's his weekend. It's the Hall of Fame game. It's not the Lamar Jackson game. Blame NBC for the timing of the interview, not Ray Lewis for responding to the interview.
Yeah, this is no way Ray Lewis's fault. If it was so important to see Lamar Jackson play his first series, then the network should have taken care of that. And there's a lot of people in Baltimore who want to hear from Ray Lewis. And they were probably watching the game more so than anybody else. And to be able to share his experience, it was way more important than a late first-round draft pick's first couple plays in a meaningless preseason game.
Yeah, it's NBC's fault. That's a production deal. They could have done picture-in-picture. They could have had both screens up if you wanted to see Lamar Jackson. It's not Ray Lewis. Ray Lewis doesn't know if the camera's on him, what the camera should be showing, what Lamar Jackson is doing behind him. It is on NBC. It's definitely not on Ray Lewis.
I want to be clear, though. You could see both. It was just Ray's talking was overshadowing Lamar running around like a chicken with his head cut.
He's a rookie. It's a Hall of Fame game. You know Ray Lewis is going to talk. Me playing against Ray, and then you watch his interviews, and I thought it was for the camera. And then I go play with the Ravens, and you have a conversation with Ray, and you realize, damn, this is really him.
Yes.
If he cares about a conversation and a topic that you guys are having, he is going to be very passionate and the conversation will go on forever. That is just him. They know how he is. They knew he was going to. If it was that important, they say, okay, Ray, let's watch Lamar Jackson's first couple snaps.
Mm-hmm.
Hold the questions. Don't even ask the question and then get back to it. They didn't do that. It's not a big deal at all.
Or ask Ray to comment on Lamar's play, and Ray would have went on forever about that and probably would have been praising the guy. Look, people don't like Ray Lewis for whatever reason because most of them don't know him. And again, they have that view that you have. I talk to a lot of my friends like, man, Ray, can that really be him?
Dude, I tell people, people ask me that all the time. I'm like, bruh, that's really him.
Yes.
It is.
Ray, and again, people don't get Ray and the spirituality thing. And I try to tell them, I was like, look, man, if you've walked a mile in Ray's shoes, you'd be spiritual too. And if that's what it takes for Ray to get through and for Ray to feel right, and if he wants to wear his spirituality and religion on his sleeve, Why should I complain? That's him. That's how he feels in his safe place, in his right spot. If you know Ray and ever get to know him, it's just purely authentic. And that's why I've never heard any of his teammates, even if they don't understand. I think occasionally Joe Flacco might make fun of Ray, but at the end of the day, they all followed Ray.
I was with Ray Lewis's first ever practice as a Baltimore Raven, and we had an alpha male playing linebacker who didn't want to give up his spot to Ray Lewis. And Ray Lewis came out in the field that first day, and it was amazing the way that the players gravitated towards him. So as much as this other guy was trying to hold his spot as a leader, Ray naturally brought these guys in. And it was one of those things that I had never seen before as a young coach. And that's why watching him and listening to him and seeing him in the Hall of Fame to me was so meaningful.
I've heard so many people talk about his first days at the University of Miami as an 18-year-old kid. And those Miami teams loaded with talent. But Ray shows up, and it's like from day one at 18, he's the leader. That's his attitude, his passion, his personality. All right, welcome back. Eric Mangini is back. We're joined now by Fox College football reporter Bruce Feldman and the founder of the Big Lead, Jason McIntyre. Let's move to Ohio State, which opened up the fall football practice today without head coach Urban Meyer, who has been placed on administrative leave after a report alleged the coach lied about how much he knew about former assistant Zach Smith's history of domestic violence. Many think Urban will never coach again at the school, with USA Today reporting that former Oklahoma coach Bob Stoops would be the clear frontrunner to replace him. For his part, Urban put out a statement today reading in part, "Here's the truth. While at the University of Florida and now at Ohio State, I have always followed proper reporting protocols and procedures when I have learned of an incident involving a student athlete, coach, or member of our staff by elevating the issues to the proper channels. And I did so regarding the Zach Smith incident in 2015. I take that responsibility very seriously, and any suggestion to the contrary is simply false. I ask that you continue to support the incredible coaches and student athletes in our program, and I look forward to rejoining them soon." Meyer also admitted to being inaccurate to the media about this story. This has got a whole lot more complicated with Urban Meyer's strong statement today that he put out, I believe, on his Twitter feed, not Ohio State's Twitter feed. He is clearly on the offensive. And a lot of times, the best offense is the best defense is a good offense. And the question I have, and we'll start with you, Bruce, is he's reported up all the proper channels in 2015. But when Brett McMurphy makes it public in 2018, Zach Smith gets fired. 2015, he's aware of it, and he reports it up the proper channels. There's a 3-year delay before the guy's fired.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of stuff in here that he's added context to, but that's the piece we don't know. That was a question a lot of people had back in Chicago 2 weeks ago at Big Ten Media Days. What was it that changed? What information did he get? Or what information did the university get? Until we know that, I think there's a lot of rushing to judgment that certainly has been on social media and certainly been on TV and in the media. And I think right now, we need to find out a lot more. I mean, what exactly did Urban Meyer know? When did he know it? And what did he do about it? I mean, he's saying he handled things. The key thing there is that went up the proper protocol and has always done that. If there is evidence, and there's now, as of last night, there's an independent review board studying this. If they can corroborate this and there's evidence of that, then he's probably still going to be the head coach there.
I would have preferred for him in this statement to say, "I reported this to our athletic director, Gene Smith." He didn't name
it. We don't know. We actually, in there, we do not know how Ohio State found out about this. I mean, this is in a city where it's entirely possible they knew before Urban Meyer knew.
I think when you look at this, and yesterday there was a big rush to judgment, and we talked about this, and there's going to be layers, and there's going to be still more layers. And right now it looks like he did the right thing from an administrative perspective. So now what happens?
He says he did.
He says he did, but at least we have a little bit more of an understanding of what each side is saying. So now, if he did, does this mean the athletic director gets fired? Like, what happens What's the repercussions if he did follow the right channels?
Yeah. I'm going to say I ate a salad for lunch. You going to take me at my word?
Listen, rush to judgment, Bruce, I think is the perfect phrase. Because our website, like many others, were speculating, hey, who should replace Urban Meyer at Ohio State? And there's still a lot of information that hasn't come out. We don't know whether the AD knows. We don't know whether someone else in the athletic department knows. But I think your point, Whitlock, about Urban Meyer releasing this on his personal account is like, hey, guys, I know you're crushing me in the media, but I'm just going to tell my side right here in a statement. And now the narrative has changed. Now all these people that have said Urban Meyer should resign, do they suddenly change and be like, let's go get the AD? Because you know on social media, that's what people want. They want heads. They want scalps. It's not really fair. I think if everybody could take a deep breath, we might find some truth here.
I'm going to go back to again, though. If you're going to offer up this kind of a defense, I want to know who you told. And if it's Gene Smith, name him, because that does seem to be where this is headed. And there will be some cynics, perhaps I might be one of them, say, is this Ohio State saying we can get a new AD better than we can get a new head coach to be as effective as Urban Meyer, and let's make Gene Smith the scapegoat? If Ohio State had to choose between Gene Smith and Urban Meyer, who are they picking, Bruce?
That is a great question. I mean, I don't think they want to have to make that choice between either or. Gene Smith's one of the most respected ADs in athletic director in athletics. And so I don't think they want to have him go. And I'm pretty sure they want to have Urban Meyer go. I think what they'd like to do is not have to have that choice. And I think we'll see what their investigation turns up. Because if there is some kind of, I think a lot of us, and I'm guilty of this too, are going down with a lot of assumptions because we saw Shelly Myers' text exchange or some of the text exchange with Zach Smith's ex-wife. And we're operating on, well, it's got to be this way or it's got to be that way. We don't know the details of how Ohio State learned of it, what they did. I think there is questions about why was he still on staff. But, you know, as Jason, I think, said, and we talked about this yesterday on Colin's show, you don't get fired for lying to the media. You don't get fired for misleading the media. And I think there's just so much, I think the rush to judgment aspect, even we're talking about it now, somebody's got to get fired. I don't know if it's going to come to that. It might.
I think, and I'm sorry for cutting you off, Eric, but they're on the hook for 30-some-odd million dollars to Urban Meyer. I guarantee you they're not on the hook to that much to Gene Smith. How old, relatively speaking, how old is Gene Smith? Is he in his 60s?
He played, he was on a Notre Dame national championship team in 1973. So let's say he's probably born in 50. So what does that make him, late 60s?
Yeah, that's a guy who's close to the end of the road. And if you need a sacrificial lamb, and if it can save Urban Meyer, if he has to swallow this, maybe that's a play that Ohio State's making. Again, I would have preferred him to say exactly who he told. The fact that he didn't, to me, leads me to believe there's a shell game being played, and they're trying to work.
If they're going to do an investigation, would he put everything out right now? I mean, I think that's the investigation supposed to prove some of that without him litigating it on Twitter.
Well, I don't think he's litigating on it. He's just.
This doesn't sound like.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't sound like. What if he did report it to the AD, and what is the protocol? So what should the AD have done next? What in this situation, is there a certain protocol that every college is supposed to follow? Is there a certain protocol in place at Ohio State? These things aren't cut and dry. These things have different sides, different perspectives on it. So let's say the AD reported to the police. Is that what his responsibility was?
I just need to know what the next steps are. His next step is to the Title IX people within their organization.
Okay, so they reported to them. Then what's the protocol for them?
Here's what I would say, Eric, just having coached in the NFL and not college. Have you coached in college football?
No.
No, in the NFL. And so there's a clear chain of command in the NFL. Owner, top executive, head coach, blah, blah, blah. In college sports, for the most part, when you're a successful head coach, you're more powerful than everybody, even the president. You're more powerful than the athletic director. And so there's a way for Urban Meyer to tell Gene Smith about this without being fully transparent and with the wink, wink, nod, nod. You know, this is Earl Bruce's grandson, who's the closest person to me, and I've been with the guy. And so there's a way to tell Gene Smith while also telling him,
I don't want to lose this guy. I don't want him fired. We got to figure out a way to keep him. And so this is, again, this little piece of paper is nice that he's, or tweet he's put out, or information he's put out, but he hasn't gone far enough for me to be comfortable with fully exonerating him. I need more details.
I don't think anybody's fully exonerating. I mean, that's why the investigation's gone.
He
by the
is.
Way, I mean, you know, it did go into the police. The police didn't charge him. I'm not saying Zach Smith shouldn't have been fired. I'm not saying Zach Smith doesn't, you know, isn't at the middle of this. And you wonder, why was he so, you know, beyond it was his mentor's grandson. You know, was he to a fault overly loyal to this guy? It sure seems like it, but he wasn't charged.
Do you think on some level this was by design to not name who he told? Now, Urban Meyer just pushed everybody onto Ohio State University. There's no more questions about Urban Meyer. It's, hey, Ohio State, you knew. Why didn't you do anything?
Well, there's still questions about Urban Meyer. I mean, it's just like, why didn't you fire?
But he told the university. He did his job, Bruce.
No. I think you're right. I am saying there's a reason there's no name in here, and he's being vague. Because, again, if he starts a pissing match with Gene Smith, who knows what the emails are like between these two? And that's all going to come out in an investigation, although they're not having an independent investigation. They're going to micromanage this investigation and get the result they want because there's just too much money on the line. I hate to be that cynical, but I am. All right, welcome back. Time for Last Call. Tomorrow, we have a chance to witness the most bizarre Hall of Fame induction ever since Terrell Owens is still upset about not being a first ballot Hall of Famer. He won't be in Canton, but in Chattanooga, Tennessee, where he's hosting his own party and charging $40 a ticket to get in. All right, TJ Husmanzada, will you watch T.O.'s induction speech?
If it's on TV, I'll watch it. If not, I won't search for it.
Oh, I'm going to hunt it down. This is going to be crazy. I'm surprised you're not trying to go to this party.
Nah.
But you don't want to pay that $40?
I don't want to pay that $40. Yeah.
What do you think about him charging for it? He's trying to make money off his Hall of Fame weekend.
Is he going to donate that money to, like, Boys and Girls Club? I'm hoping the money is donated. That's what I think it is.
And so you're not, I'm going to be hunting down. I hope someone has a live internet.
So when you find out where it's at, shoot me a text and I'll watch with you.
Yeah, I definitely want to see this.
Yeah.
I hope he mentions me. That would be good. All right, have a good weekend.